It's funny how some incidents stick in the memory. I must have been tipped out of dinghies on a dozen occasions, and I've witnessed a fistful of similar misfortunes suffered by others. But one of the more colourful involved a pal from the Midwest Dust Bowl who fled the farm and took to the sea. We hadn't crossed tacks for quarter of a century when we met in the bar in the States not long ago. One thing led to another, and it was after midnight when he persuaded me to join him for a nightcap on his anchored classic yacht. Never one to hold back, he extended a capful or two of hot air on the way out, telling me what a fine vessel she was. She looked okay on deck. It was only when I clambered down the moonlit companionway and went up to my knees in water that I realised he'd been rather overstating his case. He always had been cool in a crisis, and this was no exception. As though such events happened every day, perhaps they did, I wondered, he hit the bilge pump button, and as the water level crept down, he produced an ancient bottle of Lagavulin and two tumblers. And so we sat by the light of an oil lamp, guzzling old Scotland's finest, as the sea was finally returned to the right side of the planking. What had caused the leak remained unclear, but it was 0200 before the water receded below the sole. I was obliged to sail early in the morning, so I decided to return to my own boat. Feeling like an RNLI advert for how to drown yourself in the dinghy in one easy lesson, I made my alcoholic way gingerly up on deck and down into the punt. As I sat on the centre thwart, shipping the rollocks and wringing out my pants, the skipper turned on his spreader lights and lurched into view. "I'll row you across," he announced with a stage hiccup. "No need," I replied. He was half a bottle ahead of me, and I didn't fancy his chances. "You get your head down, mate. I'll go on my own and drop the punt off as I leave in the morning." But there was no stopping him, as he stuck one foot in the small boat. So far, so good. Unfortunately, he left the other behind on board, and the dinghy did what all dinghies do. For a few seconds, time stood still as he performed the splits. But in due course, the laws of action and reaction reasserted themselves, and he executed a spectacular somersault into the drink. One gets used to this sort of thing after 40 years or so, but this dunking was made memorable because, as my pal came to the surface, he was surrounded by a floating carpet of large denomination dollar bills, presumably released from his pockets while he was 5 feet under. A frantic scrabble followed, as all, or at least most, was safely gathered in. Somehow, I got our man back to safety and retired to the comparative peace of my own bunk. Around the waterfront, as in the city, one doesn't generally ask acquaintances what they do for a living. It's a subject a gentleman leaves alone, rather like asking someone what they paid for their yacht. It wasn't a total shock, therefore, when I heard last week that my old mate had been collared off Cape Cod, running in 2 tons of marijuana from Point South under all plain sail. Back in the 70s, when he and I first shared a dock, smoking grass was common on yachts in the US and the Caribbean. The stuff was everywhere. One customer whose yacht I'd been varnishing even tried to pay me with a large plastic bag of prime weed, but I'd been given the wink about zero tolerance for yachtsmen. Get caught with drugs in those days and you lost your boat. Simple as that. I wouldn't let the stuff cross my rail at any price whatever. Today, even possession can cost your ship. So think twice before picking up a hitchhiker if you're crossing the pond. You never know what's in the bottom of that rucksack.